Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Alan Levy Show at blogtalkradio.com. Be prepared to call in now and chat with Alan and his very special guest right here at blogtalkradio.com. With no more further ado, please welcome your host, Mr. Alan Levy.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Alan Levy Show on Blog Talk Radio. It's wonderful to be here. It was a terrific week at Blog Talk Radio. I hope all of you have had as good a week as we have had over here. It's been very exciting. I want to talk about lots of things. You are listening to The Alan Levy Show at blogtalkradio.com. I'm the founder and CEO of Blog Talk Radio. The live show is heard here on our site, and you can also listen to the archive at blogtalkradio.com/Alan Levy. That's blogtalkradio.com/Alan Levy. We have Robert Scoble scheduled to be on our show today, but he has yet to call in to the switchboard, so he may be running a bit late, and hopefully our communication lines aren't down, but that has happened in the past. So we'll wait for Robert to call in, and as you know, as you've probably read, those of you that follow Robert Scoble, he has just taken a new job, about to start with Fast Company and Mansueto Digital. So we'll definitely like to talk to him about that and other things that are happening in you know, the blogosphere. So before I do that, why don't I bring on John Havens? He's VP Business Development at Blog Talk Radio, and he'll be joining us until Robert comes on. How are you?
Good. I'm doing great. And I just spoke Robert. He should be calling in any second.
Perfect. I think we got him. So why don't you hang on?
Okay.
Robert, how are you?
Hey, really well. Thanks for having me on.
Good, my pleasure. Well, thank you for joining me. I appreciate it. I don't know if you know John Havens, but he is he's on the line as well. So,
oh yeah, I've met John a couple times.
Great. Well, thank you for joining us. So, Robert Scoble, those of you that don't know, is I went through your bio and I was trying to pick out some of the best parts because most people know who you are. And of course, you just left Podtech. And
yep.
You're going to Mansueto Digital, but the best clip I liked from your bio was Scoble is a lifelong technologist, growing up just blocks from Apple Computer and playing in the garage with electronic gadgets his father brought home from work. So
yep.
Where did
you work?
Where did your dad work?
He worked at Lockheed and at Ampex before that. The Ampex was the company that invented the VCR. So
oh, that's
yeah.
Cool. So
yeah.
So you're always involved with technology as a little kid.
Pretty much, you know, growing up in Silicon Valley, I watched the orchards get paved over and converted to technology. In junior high, we had Apple IIs. They just came out that year, and I was in the first computer club in high junior high in Cupertino, and I really wasn't totally. I was more like just a user of technology back then, but slowly got more and more into it and learned more about it.
Well, you're certainly into technology now, so
yeah.
We'll talk about that. So the last time, anyway, if anyone would like to call into the live show, this is live. The call-in number is 347-677-0649. There's also a live chat going on. If anyone would like to chat and ask a question to Robert, we can do that. The last time we met was at Mike Aronson's house in Atherton.
Yeah.
So I appreciate
right.
that. We did a little pod show. What was it, the Scoble show? Was that?
I interviewed you for the Scoble show back then.
That's great. And, you know, I really appreciated that, and that was helpful to us. We launched our new site design in September, and we've been really excited about what's happened since. So you're totally responsible for that.
Yeah, everything seems to revolve around Arrington, doesn't it?
It seems to, you know? That's true. It's pretty incredible. The center of the universe is in Atherton in Web 2.0 space.
Well, tonight I'm going to the Crunchies, so it'll be interesting to see what he's up to.
Right. Well, that's quite an extravaganza they've got planned. So now I saw also, so let's talk about Fast Company. You're working for your new boss, Ed Sussman.
Yeah,
and we interviewed on Blog Talk Radio. We were at the Network Journalism Summit for Jeff Jarvis, and we interviewed Ed Sussman, and we had a great interview with him. And then I spent around 40 minutes with him after the interview to show him what we were doing at Blog Talk Radio, and he was really interested in what we were doing. But he's a fascinating guy. What are your thoughts about him? I'm always going to be your boss, but
I've been doing a column for Fast Company for almost a year now, and every month after the column, Ed and I would chat and do an interview, sort of like what we're doing right now, and talk about what I had written about. So,
yeah, he seems genuinely interested in what's going on. Of course, I mean, he's the executive editor of Inc. and Fast Company.
Well, of the online properties. Yeah.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, so he's building a social network for the two magazines, and there's a third magazine in the works as well. So, yeah, it's going to be a fun year.
Yeah, I'm sure. So one of the questions I had for you was when this you were outed, quote-unquote outed, I guess, at the LaWeb conference, right?
Yeah,
how did
you
feel about that when you're on the stage and all of a sudden who was it, Arrington, that did that, right?
Yeah. The problem is I was asking too many people for advice. and, you know, this is a good lesson, you know, and I learned it when I left Microsoft. When I left Microsoft, I told 15 people at a small conference, and none of them were really even A-list bloggers or anybody, you know, really super popular. And, in fact, the guy who leaked the story, I didn't even know, right? It was Andy Plesser, who now I know, and actually I was on his show the other night. But, so the guy who leaked the story, I didn't even know. And within, 3 days, it had 50 million media impressions, right? It was in 140 newspapers, and I was in Business Week and Economist and all sorts of places.
So how
all based on those 50.
Yeah, you're a rock star in this community.
Yeah, well, now I'm known, but I don't know. To me, it's more of what's happened to media. Now the word of mouth network itself is media of its own, and if they want to talk about you, your stories are going to go worldwide very quickly.
Right. Well, I think it's fascinating. I was reading, of course, I was on with had a bunch of feeds coming through. I said, oh boy, that must have been uncomfortable being up there, particularly, I'm running this company, and I just wonder how, the guys at Fast Company may have felt. I mean, you were probably in conversations, and it must have been a little surprising to see this thing uncovered.
It was, and that's why if I was uncomfortable, I was like, uh-oh.
Yeah, right. That's what I mean.
I haven't even signed a deal yet, it's like, oh, great, what's this going to mean,
Well, it's good to hear that they were okay about it, and, they obviously got lots of exposure to Fast Company, which is terrific.
Yeah, no, they're really cool, and they understand this world where things leak and things move fast and move faster than you might have wanted to plan it out. That's a good PR lesson, this is not a controllable world anymore, and you got to react to the world, not try to control it,
Right. So you spent a lot of time, I know you wrote the book Naked Conversations with Shel Israel, and actually the first book when I built Blog Talk Radio, really wasn't into blogging much at all, and didn't know anything about it. And the first book that I bought actually was Naked Conversations, and I really enjoyed it. And
well, thank you very much.
Fascinating, yeah. Fascinating book. I recommend everyone listening buy that. But you spent a lot of time in PR. I know you're, technology focused, but
I think about it, because I was a journalism student in college, and so I understand how works and how newspapers.
I hear you're on your cell phone. What service are you using?
I'm sorry.
Your cell phone, I guess, is going out. I don't know if that's your cell phone or VoIP phone or what.
Yeah, I'm sorry. My phone number just got put on again. A lot of people are trying to call me to see if the phone number is real or not.
That's very funny. Yeah, so you leave your phone number on your site. Is that right? That's correct, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
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 And how many calls do you get a day? Because I know you have 6,000 tweets.
Very few, except for when, when it gets on Dig. Dig is a different animal altogether, And then people I right before my call, I got about 10 calls just from people who were like, oh, I didn't think you would actually pick up.
Very funny.
They wanted to see if this number was real or something.
That's very funny. Now, did you tweet this out, this interview, or no?
No.
Did you get the URL?
No, but I put it on my link blog, so
cool.
A few people might be watching off of that.
Yeah.
There's thousands of people who read my link blog. So.
Silicon Alley, I spoke with Peter Kafka yesterday, and I mentioned, we were talking about Blog Talk Radio. I'd never heard about it, and he just blogged about it like 10 minutes ago. So, and the title of his blog was, you know, Scoble's on, or, you know, he's on something other than a video site, know, which what we are here, of course.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Let's talk a little about Fast Company. And you wrote a terrific post about why we're going to Fast Company. And, you know, one of the comments that I wanted just to make to you is how well written it was. It was taking you a while to write this post.
Yeah, I'd been thinking about it for a few weeks. You know, I'd been thinking about it for a few months what direction my career should go in. And, you know, I had something like 6 or 7 job offers from various places, all of which were, like, astounding job offers, you know, from startups to traditional media companies. And eventually we got down to 2, to Fast Company and to running my own business. And it's funny, Arrington and Ohm and my friend Francie, a lot of people said, hey, why don't you start your own business? You have enough readers and you have a sponsor, you know, go off and start your own company. And my heart just wasn't in it. That's really why my heart wasn't in it.
Well, I saw it. I know you elaborated on that, and maybe we can get into a couple of those things. But, John, we had conversations. You had lots of conversations with the Fast Company folks, right?
Yeah, we had. I had the great opportunity to interview Lynn Johnson at Blog World Expo. She's great.
Yeah, she's a lot of fun. I met her a month ago at a Fast Company party. So.
Yeah, and they certainly have beautiful offices in New York City.
Oh, yeah, they're in the new World Trade Center 7 building up on, I don't know what floor, like the 49th floor.
Yeah, it's an incredible view. We were up there, John and I were up there talking with the folks up there about a few different things, about our platform and what we're doing. And so we're very happy to hear that you're over there. And, yeah, Lynn we met, and of course we mentioned and Ed. So, but why Fast Company? What was it that, you know, made that the choice? And, you know, how is it differentiated from other platforms, you know, other you know, publications?
Well, first, the magazines itself fit sort of what I am interested in. You know, just put me in a party and without me trying to make money or make up media or whatever, I would end up talking with the geeks and with the executives, you know, and the geeks to find out what they're building. And just because I like geeks, I like, you know, hanging around with people who are smart and technical and who are trying to build the future, right? And the executives, because I want to find out what the business strategy is and how they expect to make money and, you know, how they expect to build unique culture or a unique defense, you know, and I just like hearing those kinds of stories. You know, the other night I had dinner with the CTO of Electronic Arts, which actually was the two kinds of people I like all in one person, somebody who's technical and somebody who's trying to be a strategist and trying to lead their company into a new era. And, yeah, those people are fascinating. Their stories are fascinating, and what they're trying to do is fascinating. And it matches what the magazine was doing. You know, all the articles I was reading were exactly the same kinds of articles I'd be talking to people about at a party or whatnot. So it fit, you know, for other magazines. Oh, man, people keep calling my cell phone. So maybe we should switch over to...
Yeah, take your time. Well, you may want to call in another line. unless they have that number too, they'll be knocking your door down there as well. But that's okay.
Yeah. but anyway, so you know, there's other magazines, but they didn't quite fit that. And then also, they are pushing social networking aggressively. There's going to be a new social network that's going to open up sometime later this month, if I remember right. And that was real important to me. You know, that meant that they got the new world and understood, you know, the Facebook world, the Twitter world, that kind of thing. And they understood it better than any of the other 6 companies that I was talking with. And they also like the kind of video, they also like the kind of video I do, the interactive, low cost, you know, on the scene, intimate video that I like to do. And they understood that, and they wanted to see more of it, which other companies, they want to put you in a studio or change the video in some way. And
isn't that also, I mean, the way, you know, you're handling video, and I see sometimes, I follow you on Twitter as one of 6,000 people that follow you, and sometimes, of course, we get hit with the Scoble tweets, you know, 10 in a row. It's like, wow, you know, here's a quick video link. You know, I think you had the other day, you were at Macworld, right? And you sent a bunch of them out. But
yeah,
what's your view about podcasting, in the sense that when podcasting started, there was a focus on, you know, that edited, you know, audio file, and had it, there were no ums and no ahs, and how's that compared to, you know, what's happened with video now, where you're using, or Justin.tv, Justin was out, and then you started doing it, where it's more casual, and of course Blog Talk Radio is really just conversation. Do you see this, you know, do you see where podcasting has come, you know, where it was and where it may be going, or do you feel that canned, edited content is the way it's going to continue?
Well, I'm going to take it at Fast Company. I'm going to take my video in two directions. One, I'm going to do a much more serious, you know, sit down kind of piece with two cameras and a little bit more production value. And those will probably be surrounding the cover story kinds of things. You know, a Steve Jobs interview, or a Larry Ellison kind of interview, or something like that. And then I'm going to do the quick kind of video, which is with my cell phone on the street, you know, where I meet somebody interesting, and it's like, hey, can I just turn on my cell phone? Oh, sure, you know. And those will be completely unedited and probably shorter and probably more frivolous a little bit, but sometimes I get some really interesting interviews that way. I met Mark Anders in the street in San Francisco the other day, you know, and he's the principal scientist at Adobe, and turned it on and did a 3 or 4 minute interview and talked about his new product that he's working on. So, and I got an interview that I wouldn't have gotten otherwise if I didn't have a cell phone. So I think you're going to see those two kinds of videos, and they're going to be completely different kinds of feel and aesthetics to them. You know, I think there's a place for more entertaining, edited and slick and, you know, produced kinds of stuff. And there's also a place for a talk show. You know, KGO Radio, when you call in, they don't edit out your ums and your ahs, and it's live. And it's, it is a little produced. They decide who gets on the air, and they cut you off if you get boring, which you guys aren't doing right now.
No, we're not.
You know,
right.
But you know, that's part of talk radio, and everybody has to decide what kind of shtick they're going to have and how they're going to differentiate from everybody else, because there's so much content out there. You have to do something a little different and something a little bit more interesting, you know?
Right. Well, we had Yoko Ono on Friday. We had an interview with her, which I thought was really cool. She was in, I think she was in L.A., and she did a show. She was on for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And it was just so cool to have Yoko Ono on, and she was talking about how she was being called the Dragon Lady, and because she married John Lennon. It was just fascinating stuff. Very funny.
Amazing, you know.
It's really a lot of fun,
this new world that, you know, I mean, I live in Silicon Valley. Not everybody does. And so I can take, like last night I took you into, you know, Yahoo's brick house. Well, if you're a kid in India, you can't get over here and get in that house or go to a presentation. Now we can take everybody in the world to that little room, you know. So I think this is a fascinating world, and it's a lot of fun to participate in.
Let me ask you another question, which has something to do, and I know you consider possibly creating your own company, and you have sponsors, and you have a brand, and you've got an audience. But what is your view about the Web 2.0 space and you know, you look at so many different products that come in, and you, one thing about you, you know, you give everything a shot, it seems. I mean, not everything
yeah.
you can possibly do, but you're definitely open to trying new things, and it seems to interest you. And,
yep.
And what's your sense of, you know, what percentage of the companies or the products or the applications you see have a viable business model?
Maybe 5%, you know. I'm almost not even concerned with the business model because that comes secondary. I consider, you know, would I use it? And if I don't use it, is there a segment of the market that would use it? And are they going to be successful at getting users? Because, you know, if it's an advertising-focused company, if they don't get users, it doesn't matter if they have a business model or not, you know. The business model will never get executed on because, you know, advertisers need to see a certain audience size before they really care, enough to buy advertising on it.
Right. So you see it, you know, I mean, I was in the telecom business in the 90s, and we raised a bunch of money, and the first thing we did is we went out and bought switches, and Lucent and Nortel were selling us these switches, and we built the $350 million business, but there were so many companies that failed, but they didn't, you know, they sold us, they sell the switches. They're the first guys in to get the order. But doesn't it concern you a little that there's so many companies out there that have, you know, they get their shining sun and, you know, they're out there, they get some exposure, and there's, and 5% of applications that you see you think are viable businesses? It seems, you know, it's interesting. I don't know. Someone should be interested in that.
It's always been that way, though. That's not a new thing. I mean, in the 80s, if you went to the West Coast Computer Fair and walked around the hallways, how many of those companies are still here, you know? Two?
Right.
Maybe three, you know? Even companies that you thought were going to be radically successful, like Lotus or Borland, are gone, you know? So, you know, somebody wrote that Silicon Valley is paved on the bodies of failure, you know? And I don't mind that at all. I'm just looking for something that's going to improve my life and add to my life. And you know, whether it's a business success or not, it's almost secondary to me. You know, I do consider that because that's going to, their ability to make money is going to partly play into whether I use it or not. You know, if I'm going to put my photos somewhere, I'm going to want to make sure it's on a site that has a chance of sticking around for a few years, you know.
Right, right. You were at the Yahoo Brick House meeting last night, right?
And yep.
What is your view about what Yahoo needs to do to kind of get back into this? I mean, I know it's a complicated question, and there are lots of people trying to figure it out. But I'm mystified by Yahoo. Our largest host is someone called the Fly Lady, our biggest host. The Fly Lady has 460,000 members in her Yahoo groups. It's
yeah.
remarkable. She has, the next largest has 50,000. And I got to know the people at Yahoo groups, and I was fascinated. They have 9 million groups. They have a huge community. But, you know, and again, you don't hear much about it. What do you think they need to do with that company?
And that's a problem because they have a lot of users on a lot of things. I mean, on email, I think they have something like 300 million users on their email system, right?
Yeah.
It's just an astoundingly huge company. And that's part of the problem is it's become a big company and a little bit boring. And they lost a lot of their best technical people to Google or Facebook or startups, you know. And so they have a lot of the same problems that Microsoft has, which is, you know, new ideas, new technologies come from the smartest people, not the middle managers and not the everyday average person, you know. And they still have some really great things. I love Flickr, and I love Upcoming, and I think that's going to lead them out. That social networking approach is going to lead them out, but They're struggling a little bit for identity right now because of Google. Google's taken away their identity because Google is a more engineering-driven company and is innovating in a lot of areas that Yahoo is struggling to innovate in. And really the the Battlefront right now is on mobile, and you see Google is just slamming the market every few weeks with something new in mobile. And, you know, just in fact, just like this week at Macworld, they came out with a new iPhone version for Maps, you know, which has the My Location feature in it. And, you know, do we hear about Yahoo? Not really, you know.
It's amazing, isn't it? It's just, it's remarkable.
It is, but, you know, once you're inside these big companies and you see that big companies calcify and lose their best people to newer companies where they're going to make a lot more money, you sort of understand. You know, Microsoft's going through this too. You know, the fact that Bill Gates gave his last keynote speech at CES and couldn't come out with one innovation, couldn't come out with something new that, you know, made the market talk. It says volume. That, to me, that says more volume than Yahoo's problems. You know, at least Yahoo is still doing things like Flickr and upcoming, and, you know, and I'm using Yahoo a lot more than I am most of the Microsoft web properties.
Go ahead.
You know, but the fact that Microsoft couldn't come out with one thing that made the market stand up and talk says volumes. To have an 80,000 person company that can't get a product pipeline that's interesting, you know, is just stunning to me. But it goes back 4 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, when I told them to buy all these social media companies, and the answer that I got back was, you know, a 1,000-word essay on business value.
Well, they want to focus on the PC. I mean, that's and their desktop, their desktop applications.
Well, Office and Windows. You know, the answer was, hey, this was from Steven Sinofsky, who ran the Office team. He said, I'm running a $4 billion a year business, and you know, I wrote the letter to him back when Flickr was still independent. You know, before Yahoo bought him, and Yahoo bought him for around $30 million. So he's like, you're telling me about stuff that has no value, you know, go away. And now it has value, you know. Now all of a sudden, you know, Facebook seems like it has billions of dollars of value, and PhotoBuck it sold for, you know, $250 million, so Flickr's probably worth $1 billion. And, you know, now there's value, so, yeah, they're paying attention to it now. But 3 years ago, no, they didn't see it. And that's the real problem. To turn around somebody's perception of your big company, you have to invest in small things that don't seem important, and then you have to stick with them, and you have to make sure that the big company doesn't mess with them, and that the big company can make use of them when they become sort of, you know, interesting. You know, you saw Xerox with the Xerox Park Research Center. Well, they invented the entire world there, right? But they let it go. They didn't understand how to make use of it, you know, which is, it's really hard for a big company to see the small ideas and to turn around and reclaim, you know, the bleeding edge world. It's really hard. That's why they buy things. You know, we saw a couple acquisitions this week that were pretty interesting, actually. Sun buying MySQL, and was it Oracle bought BEA?
Yeah.
You know?
What about Facebook? I know, are you back on now? I know they booted you off. And
They only booted me for about 20 hours or
something.
Yeah,
and got tons
of
bad press, of course. And what about Zuckerberg and his performance? What do you think about that?
On 60 Minutes,
yeah,
you mean?
On 60 Minutes, yeah.
I think he's too scripted. He's not comfortable with media. Every time I meet him at a party, he shuts up. And I try to aim a camera at him and interview him, and other executives are comfortable enough to, you know, have an impromptu interview and tell you about their company, but Zuckerberg immediately shut up and put his hand out and said no interviews, and so
which is remarkable. That is remarkable.
Well, Gates did the same thing, and so does Steve Jobs. You know, these guys think that they can control their image by doing that, but really what they do is stop talking and stop, you know, stop having a conversation with people. And then when they get into something like 60 Minutes, it looks too produced. It looks too scripted. And it doesn't look like he's comfortable.
And he was nervous. Well, you know, 60 Minutes, you know. I mean, hey, you should go in there. Hey, I'm this young guy. I own the world. I mean, look what I built. I mean, it's huge.
Yeah.
We're creating all this value. People are just loving this. I mean, my son's at Indiana University. The kid can't, I mean, Facebook's their life. I mean, of course, this Beacon thing has been a bad move, I mean, at least initially, right?
Yeah.
Got some bad press. And what was your thought about Beacon?
Not well marketed, not well explained, because, again, their PR is not talking to the community. Their company does not talk with normal bloggers, and you know, it's amazing to me. That this is a small startup that's trying to kick ass and trying to, you know, change the world, and they're acting like an Apple computer, you know, where they have a PR team that just is very cold and very not communicative.
How was Google in the early days? How were they when they were the first?
Google was similar. Google was similar. It was hard to get an interview at Google. It still is.
So it hasn't worked then. They're just smarter than everyone. They're the Goldman.
Yeah,
they're the Goldman Sachs of the tech space.
Yeah, and Google had a business reason to be secretive, which was they wanted to keep Microsoft out of the market as long as possible. I'm not sure what the rationale is behind, Facebook's aloofness in terms of dealing with bloggers and explaining themselves. You know, they look at their blog. The only time he talks on his blog is when he's under pressure from the community to say something. You know, so he should be talking, you know, every week, whether he has something good or bad to talk with, and then he should explain, you know, what Beacon, what their initiatives were. They also had some unfortunate timing because they brought out Beacon at the same time they brought out the advertising model. And the advertising model is not really well thought out. Let's talk about how that works. You know, I went to the Saturn page, right, so the General Motors Saturn page, and I added myself as a fan of their product. Well, all of a sudden, all my friends are getting advertisements from Saturn that have my name signed to them. You know,
oh boy.
I understood that would happen, but I'm inside the industry and I read up on the technology. Does a normal person understand that would happen? I don't know. You know,
it doesn't seem to bother him. I mean, as he was indicating, he says, you know, I think it's actually got a higher degree of relevance if one of your friends your friend's looking at it, then you know,
he's absolutely right. I mean,
yeah.
That's crack for advertising, right?
Right.
If you're Saturn, you want the word of mouth network to talk about you because that's how you're going to increase your brand and and you're going to get people to come into the store and stuff like that. I mean, look at all the how you decide to buy products, right? I know even in the 1980s when I helped run a camera store, 80% of my sales came from word of mouth, came from people telling each other, "Hey, LZ's has the best price, you know, you should go in there," you know. And the same is true today, if not more true, because of the efficiency of our word-of-mouth networks. But, you know, when you pervert that word-of-mouth network that way, it turns it into a Tupperware party, and I'm not sure that that's the best way to do advertising. I just don't think they've nailed it. Google, when I first saw Google's AdWords, I knew that they had changed the world of advertising. It was apparent, and it was pretty clean. You know, I didn't have that kind of feeling like, oh, they're selling something out here. Where with Facebook's ad model, it feels a little sleazy, and I'm not getting anything in return for my endorsement. So I'm not going to endorse more products. You know, I want to make sure that when my name is applied to something, that I'm getting something in return, and also that my friends don't think I'm just becoming a shill for everything under the sun, you know?
Right.
Which they already think that, right? So why do I want to help them give them evidence, you know?
They still call you friends, though, right? So,
oh, yeah, you know.
I fully agree. It's fascinating. I mean, the other thing about Facebook, and you know, I know I'm not from the Valley. I don't live out there. I'm live in New Jersey, the other hotspot of Web 2.0 in northern New Jersey. But you know, it's sometimes like a herd mentality, I think. And of course, the blogosphere, and to a certain degree, is, you know, everyone loved Facebook and they talked about it. And you and many of the people, you know, within this, you know, the leaders of the you know, the A-listers are building up brands and building up companies in many ways, and then taking them down to a certain degree if they don't work. It was interesting how Facebook was just, you know, this on the tip of everyone's tongue, and it's the new, it's Google, and it's amazing, and then Beacon hits, you get kicked off, other things happen, and it's like, okay, you know, that was so 2007, and now what, you know, what's new this year? It's fascinating to me.
Well, that's part of, you know, part of it is just human behavior. You get excited about something for a little while, and then you move on. You know, you watch how a teenager approaches the world. You know, they get excited about a certain video game for, you know, 3 or 4 months, and then all of a sudden it's old and crusty, and, nah, I don't do that anymore, you know. And when I was really excited about Facebook, you know, back in, May of last year, I didn't know anything about the limitations. I didn't know I was going to be limited to 5,000 friends. I really thought it was going to be a replacement for my Rolodex. Which excited me because I have 7,000 business cards I've collected in 7 years, and I keeping track of them and remembering, you know, remembering who it was and where I met them, and remembering anything about them is really tough. I don't know if you've ever looked through a business card collection, but there's nothing on the card that really, you know, you don't have a picture of the person. You don't have any social information about who they are or what they do. So you have to really, you know, either be meticulous about writing something down on the back of a card after you meet somebody, or you just, you know, you remember a few percent of the people, and the rest of them are sort of like, I don't remember what we talked about. And with Facebook, I could remember more about my friends because there's a picture there. There's a lot of social information. I could see who's in their friends network. So maybe I don't remember who that person is, but wow, all my friends are friends of this guy. So, I bet that he's in this kind of network. He must be a player in PR, for instance, because all the PR people are friends of his. So I can make inferences based on people, based on the people who are friends of theirs, right? And I can look at their work network. Oh, he works at Microsoft. Oh, I must have worked with him, you know, and then I can also see what he wrote or he or she wrote down as how they met me, you know. So and then I can see their social behavior over time. I can see, you know, what they say is their what they're working on or you know, what their hobbies are or their resume.
So it sounds like you're a huge fan.
I'm still a huge fan of the idea. The problem is they made a promise, you know, with the word utility. They want to be a utility, and they want to be for businesses. They don't want to just be for college students, right? That when you talk to the executives over there, that, oh, yeah, we want to be a business network a la LinkedIn or whatnot.
Right.
But LinkedIn doesn't limit me to 5,000 friends. And they don't kick me off when I make a mistake, you know. And worse, when they kicked me off, they erased me. I don't know if you noticed that. Everything that I did or touched was gone, you know. And you couldn't even tell I was part of the network at one point, right?
And they brought it all back.
They brought it all back, you know. So that's scary to have no due process, to just get kicked off without any warning. And erased. You know, it's one thing if they close down your APIs and close down your account so that you can't get into it, but it's a whole other thing to erase you, just to delete everything about you and everything your friends have done with you. You know, so anybody who tagged a photo or left a photo in my, you know, is gone. You know, and that's scary.
The thing that bothers me about it is just I have a couple of people. I get friends, you know. Blog Talk Radio, and we got thousands and thousands of people here, and they come in, they find me, okay, fine, and you know, everyone gets added to friend. I mean, I once read, I mean, if someone's going to bother to follow you, then why can't you follow them? And I think that's a great, you know, that's a great way to approach things. But it just annoys me. I have some people sending me, like, hitting me with a snowball or offering me a drink or wanting to do this. I get, like, 20 or 30 applications.
Yeah.
It's just like I got to delete them. It's isn't that...
Well, you don't necessarily... I don't have to delete them. I just leave them there. I have 500 applications waiting for me. And
people
I've
wanting to, you know, blow you a kiss or do something.
Yeah, that's a big problem is that, you know, they want to be taken as a serious social utility, but it's more, but there's this dichotomy where a lot of their users want to treat it like a game. And, you know, and it removes some of the utility from the, you know, the idea I'm going to use this as a business network. Because like you said, people are like poking you and trying to get you to play ninja games. It's like, hello, you know, I'm here just to use this as a business tool. I don't want to use it like the college kids do, you know, and it's a big problem. It's going to be a problem, I think, for them to try to build a brand because we're not sure. The college kids are not sure what it's for now. You know, they're getting confused. Well, we thought this was a college kids tool where we could, you know, talk about our drunken frat parties, and now all these business people are coming in and trying to change the tool into a Rolodex, you know, and a business networking tool like LinkedIn. Well, go back to LinkedIn. I don't want you here, you know. So the brand of Facebook is going to be Zuckerberg and his team is going to really need to decide, are they a business tool? If they're a business tool, clean up your mess, you know. Or are you a college frat party tool? Well, then make a statement, you know, and decide to go that way, you know.
I agree. There's a conflict. You can't be everything to everyone. John, are you still there?
Yeah, and I was going to make a comment. There's also a privacy factor. I mean, with any social network, but my niece, who's 15, recently said, hey, Uncle John, one of your Facebook friends tried to friend me, and I deleted them. And I said, good going, because I had no idea who it was. I said, who was it? Because, of course, you know, she's 15, she's very pretty, and I'm like, why are you friending my niece without getting to me first? I thought, you know, and again, that's any social network has that problem, but I think a lot of it, I agree, Robert, is that the identity aspect of it is still out in the open. LinkedIn, you know, that type of thing would never happen. You would never ask a recommendation, you know, a third who's three levels away, hey, I saw a Flickr picture of your niece. Could you introduce me? That would never happen on LinkedIn, but
yeah.
Facebook it still does, you know?
Yeah, it's an evolving world, and kids are pretty astute at it. I mean, the fact that your niece was pretty astute and said, "Hey, you know, there's somebody creepy who's trying to add me as a friend," you know, they're very used to this new world, and they understand what's going on. The older people are like a little bit not used to dealing with that kind of social behavior as much. It's a different usage model, to tell you the truth.
I mean, I think my son in school, you know, he used it when he was in high school. He used it when he got into Indiana University. He had, you know, 20 kids already he was friendly with the first day of school. I mean, we didn't have that when we went to college. So it's a great thing. But I've spoken to him about what's going on in the applications. He says it's annoying. That's one thing. But the other thing that he doesn't realize, because these kids, I just left there, and boy, I'm jealous. I wish I was back in college. But, you know, they have pictures and images and drinking and this and that on these sites, and they don't realize that, you know, 5 years down the road, you know, employers pick it up and say, oh, this is interesting. What do you
think? Yeah.
You know, I think that's still...
I'm not too worried about that, because there will be friction for 10 years between old school employers who are conservative and don't want that kind of employee behavior. And then, you know, the world will change over and understand that this is just part of life. I mean, I have naked pictures of myself up on the internet, you know, and I have lots of drinking pictures. And so it hasn't hurt my career, right? But I've gone places where...
Totally naked?
Totally naked. Well, you can't see it, but
totally
naked.
Beach? Are you in the beach just like the Riviera?
When I worked at Userland, we had a Love Manila week, so I posed in my backyard with my computer covering my...
Actually, now we have some metadata I can create for this show.
There's a Valley Wag joke in here somewhere.
Yeah, you know, there's lots of Valley Wag jokes in my life. There's lots of Valley Wag jokes in everybody's life, really, if they really want to focus on you.
Very funny. John, did you have a question about transparency that you wanted to ask Robert?
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much. We've been touching on a lot of the stuff. I just talked to Shel Israel yesterday and on his blog recently. He's now apparently really not a fan of Facebook at all anymore, which I thought was interesting because he seems so invested in it.
I think he hit the same, you know, a lot of us were trying to use it as a Rolodex, and it looked, in the early days, it looked like it was going to be an awesome Rolodex, and then some of these other issues came in. It's like, we really don't, and you start realizing just how much information you're giving to these companies and how much control they have over your life. I mean, the fact that Facebook can erase you, I'm sorry, that's not a utility. A utility does not turn off your power if you don't pay the power bill for a month. You know, there's due process that these things go through, and there's a citizen board where you can go and complain, you know, and get your system turned back on or whatnot. You know, they can't just turn off your account because they don't like you. You know, if you're going to claim you're a utility and you're going to be a Rolodex, you've got to be different than that. You know, Outlook, when I had, you know, 6,000 contacts in my Outlook, Outlook never came and said, well, we're going to turn you off because you've been doing naughty things with your contacts, you know. So it's not a utility anymore. I didn't realize that when I was so hyped up about it. That might have been a mistake on my part, but that's part of learning what these new tools and new services do, and seeing where the edges are. That's part of the process I go through of trying to get so many people to join on my accounts, because I'm trying to push the technologies on these further than anybody else does and see where the edges are. And I find a few edges here and there.
Lisa Padilla, who you know, asked a question in the chat room. What social networks does Patrick like?
World of Warcraft.
Warcraft? Okay.
World of Warcraft. That's where his friends, I mean, that's where he first signed. I watch what he does. That's where he first signs on. And he also reads the Mac Rumors forums. He's in the Mac Rumors forums all the time on his iPhone. Every time I look over, he's reading that, you know, he's participating in the forums there.
So funny.
He's a total Apple freak, so, you know.
The apple doesn't fall far from the tree. I had to say that little pun. I listened to Dave Weiner had a little podcast that he did the other day.
Yeah,
with you and Patrick, and he was asking why aren't you at school? And I loved his comment. He gave the teacher's name and everything. It was very funny.
Yeah, yeah. He talked his way out of 2 days of school to go to Mackerel.
Right. Well, of course you got to do that. You know.
Absolutely. You know, I remember my dad taking me to the West Coast Computer Fair and doing the same kind of thing. So.
So what
it didn't.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hurt my career too much to miss a day of school here and there.
No. Things have certainly evolved. So what's the next big thing that you see happening this year that's going to kind of wow everyone and kind of stick? Because, you know, last year Twitter was certainly one of it's obviously the big thing. Facebook. What do you see the next big thing?
I don't know about the thing that's going to wow everybody, but I look at battlefronts. Where's the interesting battlefronts for companies? And mobile is certainly a huge battlefront. You know, you're seeing Google with the Android operating system trying to get in. You know, you're seeing an iPhone take – how much market share do they get in the United States? 20%? That's astounding. I mean, Microsoft spent almost $1 billion to do Windows Mobile. And, you know, it took 6 or 7 years to get less market share.
Remarkable.
yeah, you know, and that's a good example of where a company, you know, really didn't live up to its potential. You know, it's like, why didn't Microsoft do this? And they made a choice. They made a choice not to go after consumer cell phones, because they thought, oh, we can't make any money at consumer cell phones. All the money's in the enterprise. Well, yeah, but Apple's going to come into the enterprise now with the iPhone, And Microsoft might be going, or even Google might say, well, no, iPhone's not going to go to the enterprise. You watch. Every CEO I know has an iPhone. That's going to turn into enterprise sales, you know, because the CEOs aren't going to let the CTO tell them they can't use it, you know. So
go ahead.
Apple's going to come in the back door with the iPhone and wait until the SDK gets turned on in February. I think that'll be fascinating to see what actually gets turned on. I've seen some people with 100 applications on their iPhones. You know, they hacked iPhones so they can install applications on it. And I've seen some people with 100 applications already. You know, you wait until that. So the SDK opening up in February, that's going to be interesting.
But Apple got trashed. I mean, the stock is, you know, I'm a shareholder of Apple, and I'm happy to say that I bought it and right before the iPod came out, so I'm very pleased with that investment. I think when I bought it at $14 a share and at $12 in cash, okay?
Yeah.
And you, Cramer. I mean,
and you held it? You held it all the way?
I held it the whole way, yeah.
You fucker. I sold it at 22. I sold it at 22, and it was the worst decision I ever made.
I held it, and it split. I mean, it's been an unbelievable. And I've held it throughout, and I didn't sell, and I just, because, and the reason why, I mean, apart from the iPod and everyone getting them, and my kids, you know, I have three kids, and they're all buying the shit, and they want it, and this and that, but it's just their market share of the Mac is what's really driving a lot of those earnings as well. I mean, you're adding the iPhone, you've got, of course, you know, millions and millions of iPods, but their share of the Mac market, you know, in my community in New Jersey, I mean, everyone was on a Dell. Everyone's on a PC. Now they're all talking. The Apple Store is packed. You go in there, in North Jersey. So that has been, you know. So, but what happened last week with Macworld and all he released was this thin. Really, I mean, one of the key things he released was that the stock just got tanked. A lot.
Yeah, don't hold that against Apple too much. Everybody's stock got tanked.
No, I understand that.
And that's an important thing. When you're playing the stock market, you know, there's two things that drive individual stock price. One is the sector, the pressure on the sector. Is the sector going up as a whole or going down as a whole? And then is the company doing something interesting that people are appreciating? Well, at Macworld, you know, they brought up error, but the error, you know, it's not going to be a wildly successful. I don't think it's going to be a wildly successful computer. People like me will buy one because I already have two Macs and I travel a lot. So it'll be a great executive computer or a great computer for a salesperson. But I don't know that it goes mass market. It's underpowered. It wouldn't be a good first computer, you know. I'd rather take that $1,800 and buy a regular MacBook Pro because you'll get a better hard drive, you'll get a better graphics chip, you'll get a better screen, you know, yada, 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 yada. The price that you saw over the last week is more sector-driven than Apple-driven because Apple didn't drop more than a lot of my other stocks on watch.
Yeah, it hasn't been a good week. It has not been a good week.
It's a bad month so far for the stock market. And I think it's going to get worse. I think the housing problems and the dollar's weaknesses in the United States are going to continue dragging down the market. It's going to be an interesting problem because I don't think very many people are going to lose their jobs. It's not like the last bubble burst, you know, where people you could see money getting turned off, and you could see people losing their jobs like within a 6-month period. I'm not sure that's going to happen because the dollar's so weak that overseas money is going to come into the United States because the labor here is cheap. All of a sudden,
the restaurants for all these guys in New York City and the clothing and the jewelry. Manhattan is getting bombarded, as I'm sure San Francisco is on the West Coast there.
Yeah, you know, and tourists are going to come to the United States. If you're listening around the world, come to the United States. Work damn cheap. You can have a vacation here for, you know, because I know I came back from Europe, and, you know, things in Europe are so expensive for Americans. So I think the tide of tourism is going to turn around, and more people are going to come to United States this year, or Americans are going to stay home because it's so expensive. So that's going to be a trend. So I don't know that we're going to see a lot of unemployment, but our dollar is eroding. We're going to see inflation. The dollar is getting hammered overseas, and if you try to take your dollar and buy anything overseas, you're going to get less. So that you're going to notice that gas prices are still very high. Is oil still around $100 a barrel right now?
It's about $90 now.
Yeah, $90. So that's really high compared to where it was 2 years ago. What else is going on?
It's a mess.
We're still in the war, so we're still spending lots of money over in Iraq that we're never going to see back. And we still got George Bush as president for another year, so that's not approved this year. So
that's right. So
it's just a mess here economically, but yeah, that makes life interesting, you know?
Exactly. Hey, listen, thank you for taking the time to call into the show, and we look forward to... When are you joining Fast Company now? When is your
first... I've already joined them. I started on Wednesday, so...
You did? Okay, great.
Yeah.
Well, maybe
yeah.
If you're in New York, we can meet up, and John and I, we've been talking to David there, and...
I'm sure I'll be there. Any questions from the chat room at all? I only heard one question.
Yeah, we have... let me just see. I haven't gotten into the chat room there.
I'm not on the chat, so...
I think we covered that one. I think we covered some of them. We covered it in our conversation, so...
Okay.
I think people starting to be interested in your economic points of view, so we'll have to save that for another show.
I'm sure that'll be controversial, but, it's pretty clear we're in a bit of a mess. If you're watching any of the economic news coming out, the housing market is just horrid. Particularly in some areas are really getting hard hit. In Central Valley, I've seen some houses go up for auction for $300,000 that were, sold for $600,000 a year and a half ago. So that's really going to affect how people feel about themselves. If they know all their houses around them have, dropped in value by 20 or 40%, that's going to affect how much they can spend, and they certainly can't refinance anymore. I have friends who used to refinance every year and take some more money out of the house and buy a new car or whatnot,
right.
Or pay off their credit card bills.
With short-term financing, these people should be in jail. I mean, there's so much culpability to go around. It's amazing. I mean, for Merrill Lynch to lose $14 billion, it's just outrageous. I mean, forget about Web 2.0 companies that don't have a business plan. I mean, these people, the guys that run these companies, and not only that, they probably earned $10 million this year, and they lose billions and billions of dollars.
Yep.
It's
a total, let's close the sale and get our paycheck, and we won't care what happens to the company down the road, And even if there were probably smart people trying to hold back those forces, the fact that all your competition's taking the sale, it's like, well, we're losing market share because we're not closing the sales that these guys are closing. I can see how the whole market can get messed up by that. And we all knew it was going on. You could see it. A house is worth $900,000 in Silicon Valley? Give me a break,
Right. And 3 years ago, it was worth $350,000.
Yeah, you could tell that the market it was getting overheated, and there was nothing you could do about it. If you want to own a house, you have to buy in at that price, And I did.
Right.
I should have rented, right? It's really smart, but now look at the rental prices in Silicon Valley are up 10% a year, and probably will go up more this year. So it'll be hard to find a rental house, for your family if you're going to come to Silicon Valley.
Right.
Because I know a lot of people, I don't know a lot of people. I know a couple of people who are getting foreclosed out of their house because they couldn't afford any more of their house payment.
Well, listen,
it's
next
a real
time you're
problem.
Next time you're in New York, maybe we can, grab a beer or something. And John and I, we're in the city. We're right by there all the time.
I'm up for a geek lunch at the 2nd Avenue Deli. Chopped onions and some pastrami.
Very good. Well, let me know next time you're in, and we'll touch base. Thanks for being on the show today.
Cool. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. That was Robert Scoble on, and he's. I didn't know he's such a so knowledgeable about economics here.
It's a whole new realm for him to do blogging about.
Yeah, exactly. He'd probably be the leading blogger in financial matters as well. So, well, John, thank you. I know you're remote, and I appreciate you calling in and getting participating here.
Yeah, my pleasure. My pleasure.
Excellent. And we got to maybe you give me a call a little later. We've got some great things to talk about. So anyway, thanks everyone for joining. You've listened to Robert Scoble on Alan Levy Show on Blog Talk Radio. It's great. Have a great weekend, and we'll speak to you next week. Thanks.
Thanks for joining Alan and Hillary on the Alan Levy Show. Make sure to join the conversation by calling 347-677-0649 and listen to the Alan Levy Show on Blog Talk Radio.